Now, it's interesting because of the history of Islam in that part of the world. Turkey's not a friendly country to the U.S. anymore. But there are some of the very first places in all of the world where churches were planted were in Turkey. So it's not in our minds really to think of that as foundational in the Christian world, and yet it was. And there are Christians there today, though they live, many of them, in secret. So, written to believers, who here he calls, first word I had to underline in verse 1 is the word strangers. It's a great little compound Greek word. Parapitamos. Sort of sounds like a big fat creature that lives in the water and has a big mouth. Parapitamos. It literally means resident aliens. People who are living someplace semi-permanently, but it's not their home. They're from someplace else. Resident aliens. Excellent description of believers, because it says strangers or parapitamos, resident aliens in the world, and that's the word cosmos, which is the word for world system. In Ephesians, Paul writes that once we who are believers, he says, once you were not resident aliens, once you were foreigners to God's kingdom, but now you're citizens of God's kingdom. In fact, you're members of his very own household in Ephesians 1. And he said, and now you're resident aliens in the world system. Our citizenship has been transferred over. And that's such a great way to think of my life. The minute I start thinking it's all about here, it's all about now, I owe my allegiance, all my happiness, my success, everything depends on this world system. The minute I start thinking that way, I am going to have trouble. One of the things my grandma used to always say whenever I would be struggling over that issue in my 20s, wondering what I was going to do for a career, feeling the tug towards using my musical talents and getting jobs in Hollywood doing in the recording business, which is what I really wanted to do, and then feeling God tugging at my heart to do something else that it was an issue of displacement. I couldn't do both. I had to decide what I was going to give myself to. And God doesn't, you know, Shanghai people into his service, you know, kidnap you and take you, and then when you're out to sea, now you're working for me. He lets us choose. It's best to think carefully. But when I was struggling with all that, my grandma used to say, Bobby, just remember, you are a child of eternity now. You're not a child of this earth anymore. You signed up for a kingdom and you joined a family. You were born again into a family. And this is just a brief span of your existence. The biggest part of your life is going to be after you check out of this one. So keep that in mind. It's interesting that many of the writers in the New Testament, when they were writing words of encouragement, pointed that out to believers in the world system and said, you're just going to have to face the fact you don't fit here anymore. You never will fit here. The minute you try to start fitting in here, you're not going to fit in your real kingdom anymore. They are going to, in fact, James says they're at war. It's not just a peaceful coexistence. The system that you're in is at war with the kingdom that you belong to. And a lot of things get cleared up when I have that in the front of my mind. So James and Peter are pointing out that these believers who are resident aliens, in James's case, it was believers who were also Jewish. So they were excommunicated from their synagogues and disowned by their families because they were Christians. And they were hated in the secular Gentile world because they were Jews. They didn't feel like they fit anywhere. And James and Peter both use this word scattered. Diaspora is the word. Let's see, I wrote it down here. Make sure I'm getting my emphasis on the right syllables. Yeah, diaspora. Our English word disperse comes from this Greek word, but the word literally means to be deliberately sown, S-O-W-N, planted on purpose. One of my favorite Greek expositors defines this word, scattered. And if you can remember when we started, James uses this word in the very first chapter, and this is his descriptions of believers who found themselves all over the world. And I want to talk about this for a minute because this is another thing that gets my thinking straight. Many of the people Peter was writing to were living where they were living in these provinces. They were obviously away from their homeland if they were Jews. They were living where they were living primarily by their choice. In the case of the Jews that James wrote to, many of them were living there where they were living against their choice. Somebody else made the choice for them. Interesting that both writers use the same word to say, no, whatever the circumstances, whoever made the decision that got you where you are, here's the thing to keep in your mind. You belong to Jesus. You're His. That means that where you are now, you were planted there on purpose. You were deliberately sown there. I did not always believe that in my life. And because of that, I chafed when I was in a place I didn't want to live, a neighborhood I didn't like, and a house I didn't like. And I often would just move because I didn't like it. And of course, now I look back and I think, what did I miss? What? Because now I know that God can have you right where you are, even if it's just temporarily, for the sake of one person. When I moved out here, I moved almost 4,000 miles, and I moved to Mount Desert Island, and I lived in Southwest Harbor for 9 months. A really neat little house right on the water next to the Coast Guard base, and I loved living there. But the reason that I lived there was totally lost to me. I knew I was supposed to be there. I liked it, so I wasn't asking any questions. I was glad to be there. Reminded me of where I'd come from. But I did not know why He put me there. I just knew that He put me there. And we often had the conversation in the morning when I get up and have my coffee and look out with my Bible and look out the window, drinking my coffee and praying, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do today? He said, be a guy that loves Jesus that lives here. When you go have breakfast, be a guy that loves Jesus that goes there and has breakfast. And of course, I had no idea how few Christians there were. I had no idea what the people who lived there thought about Christians. And I made a lot more of a difference living there, just being a guy that loved Jesus, than I ever could have imagined coming from where I came from, where there were lots of Christians. So that would be enough reason to be planted someplace. But it wasn't for several years later when I came down here, and actually we had started our church, and the church had been going for quite a while, before I met some people who came to this church because of somebody that they knew that I met in Southwest Harbor. And this person had been touched. This was a person that was very cynical about Christians. And in fact, when I talked to them, they were pretty hostile. But the one thing that was communicated to them, well, this guy's real. He, you know, he believes this stuff. And he's non-threatening. And so when their relatives moved down to here, they wound up coming to our church. Now, could it be possible that God would put me somewhere for 9 months just for that one person? Because of all the chain of events. Well, yes, it is possible. In fact, it's probable. But God hardly ever does anything for just one reason. It may not be till I get to heaven that I realize the impact of of just blooming where he planted me. And that's the thing that Peter says here, that James says here, that needs to wash our brains. You're planted where you are. You may feel like somebody else made the decision. It may be your second or third choice. It may be your second shot at it and work. But if you belong to Jesus, and if you've given your life to Jesus, wherever it is that you are, if it's for the rest of your life, or if it's for five more days, or if it's a couple of months, you're planted there. You are deliberately sown there. Doesn't that change the way we deal with our life when we think that way? I think that way every time I go on into the coffee place there. Not just that I see you there with Kathleen, and I think, how cool is that? You know, you're working with your sister, and but I just think of all the people that I know in that town that have weird ideas about what being a Christian is. And here's, you know, here's a wide open, crazy in love with Jesus, normal person working right there, and they rub elbows with him every single day. That's not nothing. That makes a difference for eternity. There's two sides to this planted on purpose thing. When all hell breaks loose, I said this to you guys on your wedding, you know, I believe God put you guys together, but this will be tested. And of course it was immediately, wasn't it? It'll be a fun ride. It truly will. It'll be a great adventure. Because see, any time somebody's planted any place by God, it makes a dent in the devil's kingdom. And he doesn't like that, and of course there will be resistance. And when all hell breaks loose, when the economy goes south, when your wife leaves, when people tell you you shouldn't be a pastor anymore, when, I mean, I can give you a list of things. There's nothing like knowing that you are where you are supposed to be because God said so. Not because you took a vote. Not because you even voted, but because you were planted there on purpose. I can't tell you what a great strength that is. Three primary reasons why people would be in these Roman provinces who were believers. And persecution was probably the smallest one, because the main persecution against Christians didn't happen until started about 10 years after Peter wrote this letter. And all hell literally did break loose against the church, and Christians were scattered all over the world. But persecution was one reason. People were just chased out of town. We saw that in the book of Acts. That's why a lot of the people who were in Jerusalem for the day of Pentecost, they were chased out of town, and that wound up being a God thing. Business was another reason. Either they got transferred, or they made a choice, and they wound up in these Roman provinces simply because of business. Some of them were just there because it was home. But what was the thing that set them all apart that made them planted on purpose? I'm getting a lot out of just one or two words, aren't I? But they're big words. The thing that made them planted on purpose is that they belonged to Jesus. They were filled with his Spirit. I don't know about you, but many times those two words, strangers, resident aliens, and the words planted on purpose, have comforted me. When I think, I don't fit here, I don't particularly like it here, they don't particularly like me, once in a while I think that way, I don't always think that way. But when I do, he always tells me the same thing. He says, yeah, but you're planted there. Don't waste it. Bloom where you're planted. Isn't it weird how we can have such a stinky attitude because you don't want to be where you are, that you can totally blow every opportunity that was why God put you there? So even when it's just temporary, don't waste it. Bloom where he's planted you. Peter says, you guys, you are planted. Yeah, I know you I know you feel like you're just a chess piece being moved around sometimes, but just remember whose chess piece you are. So, strangers in the world system, planted on purpose throughout all parts of Rome. Verse 2, who have been chosen according to the foreknowledge of God. And this we'll spend some, probably a good chunk of our time talking about this. A number of years ago, I ran into a group of people, quite a large group of people, actually, and a whole organization of people scattered all over the world who believe that God doesn't know everything. That God only knows some things. In fact, their theology, they say God only knows what is knowable, which is, who says what's knowable? Well, they do, you know. And of course, they've got a real problem with Bible prophecy because the Bible teaches that God doesn't just guess about what's going to happen in the future. The Bible teaches that God knows the future. And that's wrapped up in this word, according to the foreknowledge of God. So I want to talk about this. I want to talk first about what foreknowledge is, how God lives in linear time and what we call the time-space continuum, how God exists in relation to that. That's important for us to know. All of a sudden, Bible prophecy becomes thrilling. A bunch of scriptures become thrilling when you realize that God, when God says something's going to happen, it's because he's there. He's watching it happen. And that it becomes a lot more certain than our kind of guesswork. And then I want to talk about what it means to be chosen beforehand by God who has foreknowledge. Foreknowledge. The Greek word is the word prognosko. If you've done Bible studies with me before, you probably recognize the verb gnosko. It's important that we understand the Greek word. There are several Greek words for knowledge. This one means to know experientially. It means to know by what we would call knowing by experience. The story I always tell is when I was 7 years old and in a farmhouse, my dad told us to never put our fingers in the light sockets on the wall sconces at the end of the bathtub. They were the perfect size for a kid finger. We couldn't afford the little weeny, little tiny little light bulbs that went in them. So he just gave us the warning, do not ever put your fingers in those light sockets. So in my inquiring 7-year-old mind, as I'm laying there in the bathtub, I'm looking up and I'm thinking, of course, my dad didn't know anything as far as I was concerned. He just got smarter and smarter the older I got. And I remember thinking, I wonder what would happen. And so I stood up. I pulled the plug on the tub or I would have killed myself. I'm standing there dripping wet. And I just reached up and I realized it's the perfect size for my finger. So I just stuck my little finger down in there. And I thought, well, what's the big deal? And then I noticed that the little switch, there was a switch on it, and said, oh, the switch is turned off. So with my finger standing there in the bathtub, I turned the switch on. Knocked me clear out of the tub, onto the floor. And all of a sudden, I had gnosko knowledge. I never did that again. A lot of us have learned important things with gnosko knowledge, knowledge by experience. Okay, this is the part that gives people trouble. Because prognosko means to know something by experience before it happens. How do you do that? Well, the answer is you don't do that, and I don't do that. God's the only one who can do that. We live in time, what we call the time-space continuum, which isn't forever, and I think is pretty much confined to the lives that we live here and the world that we live in. Even Einstein knows that time is relative to space. To travel outside of this environment that we're in. But we live in time in a sequential way. One moment by moment, in a sequence. We're stuck there. No matter how much we want to, we can't even fast forward. We can't even rewind. We're just stuck in that moment by moment unfolding. God is not. He's not confined to that. God is able to engage with us. He's able to walk with us our whole entire life in a sequential way, moment by moment by moment by moment by moment. I love that about him. That's the life in my life. However, God at any time in his, in fact, at every time in existence, can also be 1,000 years into the future, living there, experiencing that. God's the only one who can do that. So the foreknowledge of God, and of course there's a lot of scripture about that. I'll give you a couple of them that I think are handy. Isaiah 46, I'll give you one from the Old Testament, one from the New Testament. You can look up the Hebrew and Greek words if you want to. Isaiah 46:10 says that God knows and announces the end, that is the future, from the beginning. He tells you exactly what's going to happen in the future from the beginning because he knows beforehand, foreknowledge. Acts 15:18 says, all of the works of God are known to him from the beginning. There's that phrase again. I looked up the word known, and it's not the word gnosko, but it is a derivative of the word gnosko. That means to be known or to know something by experience. So God knows by experience all of his works from the beginning. I'm just putting myself in Peter's place. Probably, after that breakfast, there on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, and we'll be there when those of us that go to Israel. After that breakfast, probably one of the most comforting things that Peter could even ever think of the rest of his life was that Jesus was not shocked by Peter's failure. Peter was greatly shocked. Probably the other guys were maybe not shocked, maybe just wary. But when Peter realized that when Peter was called, when Jesus called to this fisherman that he barely knew and said, leave your nets and follow me, and Peter did, that Jesus saw the whole story at that moment. All the failures, all the good, all the bad. It was all in Jesus' view. And I'll tell you, that's a very, very comforting thing to me. When it means that God chose us, he called us out, he picked us, he selected us. I'm trying to think of synonyms for this word, chose. He selected us out of the world. According to his prognosko, his foreknowledge, it means that God made a decision about us, we who are believers, because that's who Peter's writing to, based on his foreknowledge, his knowing ahead of time how we were going to respond to him before we ever made a decision about him. He chose us knowing ahead of time how we were going to respond, but we hadn't responded yet. I got into a huge discussion with one of my assistant pastors in my first church, and that's how I came to find out that there are a bunch of Christians that don't believe God knows everything. And he ascribed to what's called the incomplete foreknowledge of God, or another name for that doctrine is called moral government, which means that God just sets up basic principles for the world and sort of the details are all up to us and our destiny is depending on our own choices. That God really doesn't, he doesn't know everything. He doesn't really know the future. They have a big problem with Bible prophecy. In fact, some prophecy they just don't talk about. Because God called people by name who were not even born yet.